Greet each one in the precious name of Jesus. Welcome to the visitors among us. We trust that you can worship the Lord with us here today. I'd like you to open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. We're going to look this morning at an Old Testament character. Before we do that, it's good to remember, especially when we're as early in the book of Genesis as chapter 11, but it's true of all the book of Genesis, but there's a lot of time elapsed between chapters in this book. There's a lot of time covered in this book, vast amount of time. And it's good for us in the far removed distance from that to think about when we study a character in this setting, how different his setting was. We're going to look this morning at the character of Lot. Lot and Abraham, Abram as he's called in chapter 11, lived in a time like no other time in Bible times. We are used to governments. We're used to churches. We're used to living in a land that has many resources for us and also many sets of infrastructure put up by people who lived before us that Abraham and Lot knew nothing about, nothing at all. And it's good for us to think about that in the outstart of this study. And they also knew nothing about the New Testament in its entirety. They knew none of it and very little, did not have anything written of the Word of God, even the Old Testament, or very little of it at this time. And so it was different. I'd like you to think about that as we do this study. And yes, yet I think there is some very vivid lessons that can be learned from this. Genesis chapter 11, looking at verse 27. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So Terah, the man Terah here, had three sons, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. So there's one grandchild here in this verse, to Terah. Lot was born to Haran. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So Lot was left without a father at a young age. His father died before his grandfather. And Abram and Nahor took them wives, and the name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no children. And Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, and his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So we have an introduction to Lot's life here. His father was Terah, His grandfather was Terah. His father was Haran. His uncle was Abram. And it appears that Terah and Abram took special care of Lot, possibly because he was fatherless. Moving to our text of the day, Genesis chapter 13, beginning at verse 1. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar, which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Note the difference between the description of Abram's wealth and Lot's, and that was probably because Lot was a young man. But both were wealthy, but it certainly appears that Abram had much more. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. Again, our culture is hard to understand that verse, but these men were men who lived in tents, and their herds and their cattle and their sheep is what they did daily. They took care of their grazing animals. If you know anything about grazing animals, you know they need enough grass to eat. And so the more cattle and the more herds and the more flocks that these two men had, the more space that it took. And it says they were both so wealthy that they couldn't live together. There wasn't enough room. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. So you see the pressure coming from the herdsmen of Abram and Lot and the Canaanite and the Perizzite. They were also grazing their animals, and there was conflict. There wasn't enough land. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Abram, the uncle, talking to his nephew. Let there be no strife, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. Again, culture would certainly dictate in Abram and Lot's day that it was exceedingly gracious for Uncle Abram to say, you choose first. Just wherever you want to go, you go, and I'll take what's left over. And in their culture, it was understood that Abram would say that. But in turn, it was also understood that the young man, the nephew, would say, oh no, no. I can't choose first. Abram, you tell me where I should go. You tell me where you would like to go. And we'll work it out together. Instead, we have verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And Lot chose. just as Abram said, he chose. There was no discourse between the two about what would be wise for him to choose. There was no discourse about letting Abram choose first. It simply says that Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. My text verse is verse 12. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. My title this morning is, How Am I Pitching My Tent? How am I pitching my tent? What does it mean to pitch a tent? What does it mean to pitch it in a certain way? What does it mean when it says that Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom? What's that mean to you, anyone? In a very physical way. You know anything about tents?
Set it up toward
Sodom. He set it up toward Sodom.
It was open toward Sodom.
Open toward Sodom. The door of his tent was turned toward Sodom. And the writer of Holy Scripture deemed that that was important to put here. What difference did it make if he'd have turned it around and pointed it the other way? There was a difference. He pitched his tent toward Sodom, and I believe, especially men and fathers today, are responsible for which direction they pitch their tent. And whether you like it or not, you're pitching it one way or another. The story of Lot is very interesting, and before we get too hard on him, I would like to read 2 Peter chapter 2. Keep your finger in here to Genesis. We're coming right back. It's always interesting to know what other writers in Scripture have to say about Bible characters. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6 through 8. Peter is reminiscing God's destruction and God's judgment on different eras of time, and he mentions Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot in verses 6 through 8. I'll read 2 Peter 2, verse 6. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. So Peter says that God delivered just Lot. And he talks about Lot's righteous soul. Just backing up and looking at the verses we just read in Genesis 13. In verse 8, we clearly see that Abram was the peacemaker. He said, let there be no strife. But we have no record of Lot instigating peace or even of agreeing with Abram that we be brethren. In verse 9, I already mentioned that the culture of the day would have required that Lot refuse the offer of first choice, but he did not. He chose first. In verse 10, he lifted up his eyes. And I believe at this point in Lot's life, when he lifted up his eyes, well, we could ask the question was this way, what did he see? What did he see? He saw watered plains with lush grass by the river. He saw the mountains with their rough terrain and thin parceled out grass and little water. I believe he saw easy ways to multiply his wealth. Maybe he thought, well, Abram is a rich man. He doesn't need any more wealth. So we'll let him go where it's harder, and I'll go where it's easier, and I'll get rich like Abram. I don't know if those were his thoughts or not. But he did like what he saw, the watered plain, the easy living. And it seems as though he also saw an intriguing city. We aren't told much about that, but it seems like that's part of what he saw when he lifted up his eyes. Lot saw physical things, just like you and I do when we look around in this world. See physical things. Abram saw all of that too when he was standing there. But I believe Abram was looking through the eyes of faith. If you study his surrounding chapters and verses, we're focusing on Lot this morning, but you would see that mixed in with his physical view of what he saw, he had faith. When he got given the mountains and the rough terrain, he didn't complain. The eyes of faith said, I can do it. My men can do that. My herds can do that. Not a problem. The eyes of faith. Verse 12. Our text verse where our title came from, he pitched his tent towards Sodom. It's very interesting what Abram is doing. If you look at the surrounding verses, I didn't read them all, but right about the same time as Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom, Abram went out and he built an altar. He was building an altar. That was because of his faith in the unknown God, in the God that he knew, that perhaps Lot did not know as carefully as he should have. And yet we must remember what 2 Peter said. This righteous man, Lot. So apparently he had a connection with the God of heaven as well. But he pitched his tent towards Sodom. Genesis chapter 14 and verse 8. If you look at this whole chapter, you'll see the plans for war came before this. I'm not going to read all of them. I'm going to start at verse 8. Actually, verse 8 and 9 are part of the war scheme as well. It gives you the names of the kings. And basically what we're looking for here is who won. And it was not the king of Sodom who won, but the other kings, the other group of kings. And in verse 11 is really what we're looking for. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. We're not given time frame here. I don't know how much time elapsed in between, but something took place. The tent that was pitched toward Sodom had apparently gotten closer to Sodom, because here it says that Lot now dwelt in Sodom. He dwelt in Sodom, and because he lived there, he was taken with the rest of the people. He's carried away captive. If you continue on, 13 through 16, you see that Lot is rescued by Abram. There was a servant who came running and said, "Hey, they overtook Sodom and Gomorrah and they took your nephew Lot." And so Abram arose with the men out of his house, and he ran after the army. And he rescued Lot and his family and his possessions, and he brought them all back. I don't know how much of a relationship there was between Abram and Lot at this time in their lives. I don't know how much they communicated in between the time when they separated and here. But it's evident that Abram still was seeking for the things of peace. It's evident that Abram was not holding any grudges against Lot because of his choice, and wishing that he could be down there in the valley. But he went and did a military feat that was impossible in the eyes of man, simply because he loved his nephew. Truly, this was a warning from God to Lot about the danger of living in this wicked city. And truly, you think Lot, the nephew, would come back and say to Abram, "Well, thank you. Thank you for rescuing me. Abram, what do you think I should do? It's evident that I shouldn't live in this city and get carried away with the next group of kings that come along." Even from a physical perspective, it seems like that would have been wise. But we don't read anywhere that Lot sought advice from Abram. Rather, it's evident, as we continue on in Genesis chapter 18, that Lot continues to live in the city. Worthwhile reading would be these chapters that we're skipping. I thought about taking this sermon and laying Abram and Lot totally beside each other and look at all the parallels, and that would be very interesting for you to do, to see what Abram is doing here while Lot is in the city gate at Sodom. But I'm not going to do that. I'll let you do that for that. Let that for your study. But looking at Genesis chapter 18, in the first 8 verses, we have the very familiar account of Abram lifting up his eyes, and he saw men coming, and the hospitality that he showed to them, the very familiar story that you're used to. You know it. I won't read it. That's the beginning of chapter 18, 1 through 8. In 16 to 22, we have promises made to Abram. Abraham, as he's called in this chapter, that's a change that took place. And we have in verse 19, God saying, "For I know him, Abraham, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abram that which he has spoken of him." And in verse 23 to 33, well, before that, just a little bit, God seems to, he says, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm going to do?" And he decides not to, and so he tells Abraham that he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And then we have the Familiar intercession of Abraham from verses 23 to 33, where Abraham said, God, you're not going to destroy the wicked and the righteous together, are you? Suppose there's only, where did he start? 50, 100, I don't remember, but wherever he started. He said, suppose there's this many. And God said, no, I won't do it. And apparently in Abraham's mind, he knew enough about the city, he started to think, and he was worried there wasn't that many, and he went down and down and down, and finally he got all the way down to 10. And Abraham said, if there's 10 people there, will you destroy the city with the good and the righteous together? And God said, no, I won't. In Genesis 19, these are two of the men who came to see Abraham in chapter 18. There were three that came to see Abraham. There was only two, but they were the same two. That's evident when you read these chapters together. Verse 19, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. That's worthy of our note as well. Men who sat in the gate were the judges of the city. So Lot had been raised in position. First he pitched his tent toward Sodom. Then he got closer to Sodom. Then he moved into Sodom. And now he's sitting at the gate. He's a judge in this city. He's been promoted. Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, these men, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. Very typical of their culture. But Lot knew what to do, and he pressed upon them greatly. And they turned in unto him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. That picture was interesting to me, comparing it with Abraham's hospitality. We see Lot's hospitality was much the same to the meeting of the men. And we see that he did have unleavened bread for them to eat, which was quite different from what he would have had in any other house in the city, I'm sure. At what point did Abraham realize that these three men that came were angels? And at what point did Lot realize that these two men that came were angels? I'm not sure, but it became apparent to both of them. Verse 4. He had given them a feast, but before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, where are the men which came in to thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them. And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him. He risked his life in doing that, I believe, and that was for the protection of the stranger. He knew that was his duty and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men, the two men inside, put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door. And they, the angels, smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. A terrible scene. A terrible night. A terrible situation that Lot got himself into. So desperate that he offered his two virgin daughters to these wicked men. I don't know how he could do that and be a righteous man. But the angels took control and brought blindness to the wicked men outside the door. Verse 12, and the men said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters and whatsoever thou hast in the city? Bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. God had promised Abram that he would not destroy the city if there was 10 righteous. But the angels only found 4 that were even willing to go. And even they lingered in verse 16. And while he lingered, the man laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him. And they brought him forth and set him without the city. And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my Lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And the angel said unto him, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou be come thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. We have the angels commanding them to flee. Did Lot know at this point that they were angels? He certainly should have, because they had the power to stop the men with blindness. But if Lot knew them to be the angels of God and they commanded him to flee, what was wrong that Lot said, oh, not so, my Lord? He's willing to challenge the angels of God. Verse 23, the sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. I don't think you can quite fathom that scene. But try a little. Two daughters and your wife and you fleeing on foot because the angel told you to flee. And as you ran, your wife hesitates and looks back, and you look over and she's a pillar of salt. Just like that. Changes from a human being to a white pillar of salt. And at that point, Lot and his daughters apparently did something right, and that was they kept on running. They kept on running. Perhaps at that point they realized that it was running for their life. Escape for thine life. Haste thee, escape thither. Verse 27, and Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord, and he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as a smoke of a furnace. Doesn't tell us here what Abraham thought. But he must have wondered about Lot and whether Lot was being burnt with the rest. And he must have realized that in God's eyes, God couldn't find 10 righteous people in that city. The story of Lot. Again, not much detail is given, but what happened to Lot's flocks and herds, his tents and his servants? I don't have the answer to that. I don't know if they were out in the field grazing when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and if his flocks and herds were destroyed with the people. I don't know the answer to that question. But the story never says anything more about his flocks and herds and his tents and his servants. So if he didn't lose them in the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, maybe he had sold out before he moved into the city. I don't know. We're not told. But at any rate, they were not a part of his life anymore. The thing that he had looked at and was so sure was going to be the success of his life had already disappeared. Verse 29, and it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave and his two daughters. Again, we're left to wonder why. Surely Lot knew his uncle well enough that if he would have made his way back to Abram, Abram would have had good advice for him and told him what to do and helped him on his journey. I'm sure Abram would have done that. I'm sure Lot knew he would, but he didn't go. He did finally end up going to the mountain, as the angel had told him, out of fear and staying in the small city, probably after seeing the utter destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. He thought the mountain was safer, even if he might die there. Lot was an aged man at this point. Perhaps that affected him not wanting to go to the mountain in the beginning. But Lot's daughters were old enough to surely have known Uncle Abraham. And why didn't they rise up and say, let's go back? I think I see depression setting in Lot's life. Think about it. We think about Job losing everything, but what did Lot lose? He lost his flocks. He lost his herds, his watered plains that he loved. He lost his wife. He could still go back and look another day, and she was there, a pillar of salt. He lost his married children in Sodom. He lost his grandchildren, if there were any there. He lost his sons-in-law. He lost his dwelling place in Sodom. He lost his position in the city gate. And he's living in a cave. And he's looking back on his life. Verse 31. And the firstborn daughter said unto the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine. And we will lie with him that he may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And he perceived not when she lay down nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also. And go thou in and lie with him, that he may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down or when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. Oh, the awful wickedness of Lot's daughters. Oh, the awful consequences of strong drink. Two sons were born in verse 37 and 38. And the firstborn bare a son and called his name Moab. And the same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. The same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy 23. So these two sons were the heads of two nations, the Ammonites and the Moabites. And God said in Deuteronomy 23 to his people, verse 3, an Ammonite or a Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever, because they met you not with bread and with water in the way when you came forth out of Egypt, and because they hired against thee Balaam, the son of Beor, of Pethor, of Mesopotamia, to curse thee. Nevertheless, the Lord thy God would not hearken unto Balaam, but the Lord thy God turned the curse into a blessing unto thee, because the Lord thy God loved thee. Thou shalt not seek their peace nor their prosperity all thy days forever. So what happened? Abram said, let there be no strife, for we be brethren. Two righteous men living totally different lifestyles. Abram concerned about no strife. Lot seemingly not too concerned about the fact that he was Abram's nephew. But still a righteous man, as Peter calls him. What had happened in one generation? Who was to blame? How could it have been avoided? Those are questions that we ought to think about long and hard on this story. What happened in one generation? Who was to blame? Did the pitching of the tent have anything to do with it? How could it have been avoided? Think about Lot in summary. Lot lifted up his eyes, and Lot chose with the eyes of this world and not the eyes of faith. Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. There was something attractive about that city. He was a righteous man, and yet he could live in that wicked city and still be a righteous man. And maybe he said that, I can do this. I can still be God's servant, even if I live in Sodom. And maybe that was true. But his children couldn't. The next generation couldn't. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. Then he dwelt in Sodom. Then he sat in the gate of Sodom. Then in desperation on a terrible night, he offers his two virgin daughters to the vile men outside the door. And when the angel says to flee, he says, oh, not so, my Lord. It does seem there's a turn of events when his wife becomes a pillar of salt, because he and his daughters kept on running. And that would have been hard to do. He did not do what the angel said immediately. He did not go to the mountain, lest he would die. We live in a vastly different world, but we still pitch our tents. As fathers in the home, you pitch your tent. Yes, perhaps you can live with the evil influences that you allow in your home, but can your children? Will the next generation be able to? How teachable am I? Lot did not seem to want advice from Abram. Are we men that are looking for advice from our brothers? The next time you face a business decision, make sure you look with not only the eyes, not only the natural eyes like Lot had, and make sure you don't just see the ease and the good in it. And you forget to, with the eyes of faith, think about the repercussions of where that may lead the coming generation. I believe we pitch our tents, by the way, we train our children. We pitch our tents by our devotion to God. Go back and look at Abram and his altars. Many, many ways we pitch our tents. May we pitch our tents in a way that will lead our children to righteousness. Shall we kneel for prayer?